We've spoken about it all week. The bump, David Mackay, Hunter Clark, what was to happen, It goes to the tribunal last night, and the tribunal has found, so the three tribunal members were Wispy.
They were David Neitz.
Yes.
And
Richard Loveridge.
Richard Loveridge and
Paul Williams.
Paul Williams, yeah.
They declared it not unreasonable to contest the ball in the manner that he did or make contact as he had. End of story. No case to answer. Out you go. What does it mean when Stephen Hocking, who's the boss of footy, this is where we've got to go to now. So I think it was the right decision. You think it was the right decision. Some people don't. Fair enough. We get it. Everyone's got a different view. I would have been really concerned had that been rubbed out, which is not to say they're not going to make change somewhere down the track. What does Stephen Hocking do today? He's the boss of footy. He's the boss of where the game's going. He's the one who jumped over the top of Michael Christian and Christian said, no, I can't grade this, no case. He said, no, we're grading it. Not only are we grading, we're going to go straight to the tribunal. What's he do today?
Well, this has been said before, and I'll say it again, and that is the tribunal is not the place to go and determine the rules of the game.
Okay, granted. So what's Stephen Hocking do today?
I think he sits down with other people at the AFL and then they determine whether or not they want to continue the debate about the contact that gets made out there on the field. And if they do, then they're going to have to make changes to the rules of the game. If that's what they want to determine, if they thought that that incident there needed to be penalised in some way, then there is a determination that they need to make about the way the rules of the game are actually written.
Yeah, they've realised, he would be realising you can't shoehorn a different interpretation halfway through the year. In this instance, he wanted that to go in year 3 week. You just can't do that. You can't impose. As we said yesterday, and I continue to say, Jared, and it's not my phrase, Jared Healy, tomorrow's answer to today's incident. You can't impose tomorrow's answer to today's incident. That's the incident now. If you want in the future to change things, okay, change things. But no way could you have suspended David Mackay last night.
When you think about the position that he finds himself in right now, though, how do you change the game?
Well, you can't change it this year.
No. But how, even going forward, how do you determine a change of the way the rules of the game are structured or written so that the next time an incident like that came before the tribunal, it would be illegal and somebody would be suspended for it?
So I think that's the point. For incidents like that, like we've legislated for change previously successfully and done it really well, head over the footy, sling tackle, all those things. For incidents like that, and this is goes to the core of it for me, is that when there's a ball in dispute, I heard Malcolm Blight, who I love Malcolm Blight, yesterday talk to Jared, and he was talking about, players are able to get out of their way of teammates. I'm thinking...
That was the worst point that he made when he was explaining this.
Of course you can, because the contest is not between you and your teammate for the ball. Mm. The contest is between you and the opponent.
That's right. That wasn't the best point.
Right. Okay. So in this case, there's the ball. It's in dispute. You have to be able to go and get the footy, Tim.
Right.
And now what will happen, if you want to say, how can you legislate change, they're going to have to turn around and say, well, now for a player, you've got to make a discretionary choice. And if like bumping, if you choose to bump, that's okay. You can bump to the side. But if in that process you make head high contact, you are going to be liable. Once upon a time, that was never the case, remember?
Okay, so...
we could bump and go, incidental contact, I knocked him out, but I bumped him on the shoulder.
So what you're saying there, though, is even if you are contesting the ball, but in the act of contesting the ball, which is a fair act to perform out there on the football field, if in that act you are liable for any contact that you may make above the shoulders.
Any is broadly in sweeping, but that is where it's going to go into now. It was always, if you're contesting the ball, you had some degree of impunity.
Yes.
That's not going to be the case. If you want to make change going forward, I'm happy to leave it, by the way.
As it is, yeah.
I'm happy to leave it and am cognizant of the concerns around head injury like we all are, but I am of the opinion that we will not be able to legislate that out of the game for good. And instances like this will occur, as scary as it is on the day, they're going to occur if it's in the pursuit of the footy.
After all this debate... and given what happened at the tribunal last night, nothing has changed except this. We've had a conversation now that has run since the weekend mm-hmm. about this. I think it's been a really healthy conversation mm-hmm. about where the game is at and what we want in our game and what we deem to be a safe act on the field mm. or what we don't. Because you and I have even stretched our own minds and our own thoughts about things that we simply take as a way the game is played, mm. but maybe we should be looking at them differently. I don't know whether we both arrived at the view that we should look differently at them, but maybe we should consider the view of looking at them yeah. differently. And if we want the game to be safer, our responsibility today, given what we know about head trauma and the long-term effects of getting knocks on the head, is that down the track it mm. is dangerous. It will affect the rest of our lives. So yep. our responsibility as people that are associated with the game, and that's everybody, that's a fan, that's everybody, is to try and make the game as safe as we possibly can for those playing it.
Yes, and I think that's a really important part of it. As strong as you are in your views and your opinions about the way the game's played and what you can and can't do, then we need to always be open to transformational change. To a point, though, David Mackay, I keep saying Mackay, I apologise. David Mackay was a class act last night. Let me just say that off the top, I'll say it again when Adam Kelly is there. The way he spoke post, I don't know whether you caught
it. I didn't hear anything.
Just a class act. His first and main concern was for Hunter Clark. He reiterated that, you know, and then went and explained himself. So I just wanted to say that. I thought David Mackay handled himself beautifully. We need to challenge consistently. I don't – when it's a contact – when it's a sport of contact and a sport of a contested ball situation, then I think going forward I'm going to accept that there are going to be these sorts of incidents, whether they're, you know, the head knock incident. I'm accepting that they're going to happen from time to time.
And it's okay to analyse them forensically too. That's what we should be doing. If that act is a football act and it's deemed to be what we think is a fair and reasonable attack on ball, not attack on man, we're talking attack on ball, then we should slow them down frame by frame to make sure that we get the right decision and the players are out there and they're playing within the rules of the game. I reckon that you have, though, shifted your position a little bit in terms of that player going back with the fly of the ball, because this is where the conversation started to drift at different times this week too. Okay, how far do we go with this? What is a reckless or what is a careless act on a football field that endangers the lives of others out there?
Yeah, well, but this is when, and I know we all are prone to making big emotional statements, I'll never go back and watch footy, or I won't do this. We will. Footy, we love footy. Footy, we're just debating a component of it. There will be some part of the game that will be lost its appeal to me if we are still not able to have acts of courage and bravery like that.
Of going back with the fly of the ball. Yeah, yes, but the difference here is now, okay, even Jordan Lewis said this yesterday, and that is to have a look. Like once upon a time we said, oh, no, you can't have a look because, you know, that's a sign of cowardice, you know. Don't go back and look at what's coming the other way. Now it's an accepted thing in the game that you do have a look before you go back with the fly of the ball.
But I don't want to penalise the bloke that doesn't, Tim. There's the ball. No one's got a play on the ball until such time as you have had a play on it. So the ball is there to be got, whether it's in the air or whether it's on the ground.
Yeah, I think
No one has a right to the play on it. Otherwise, we'd never see the marks. Where did he come from? How did that happen? You know, the thing about it is unrealistic attempt at a mark, you know, that free kick that's paid. That's unrealistic. What's unrealistic for me...
So you don't agree with that as a decision?
...is totally realistic for Shea Bolton. So if we start to take that out of the game, we're going to lose elements of it. So don't do what Nick Riewoldt done. Well, why? Because someone can do it, and it becomes a highlight of the game. I don't want that legislated out.
But in the act of doing that, he could make contact with somebody's head.
That's right.
Knock them out.
That's
right. Break their jaw.
That's right.
Cause them all sorts of damage long term.
Yep.
So, but you don't think that is something that we should legislate against in our game, even though we could. We could stop that.
If Nick has got eyes on the football, a football that's in, not Nick, let's take anyone. Just don't worry about Nick. The ball is in the air. You are looking at the ball and you're entitled to fly and mark that football. Then the...
I think that's where the debate will get to, whether or not you are in, I think that's where the debate will end up, is whether you are entitled to go for that ball.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that's going to be, it's going to be a hard one. Because if it changes, then we go, David McKay, who I've just had a text message saying, no, I was pronouncing it right.
It is McKay.
Yeah, so I don't know what that person was talking about. So David McKay is then going to go, right, I'm halfway there. Although I think I can get to that ball, at the same time, I'm going to have to stop or slow down demonstrably. What sort of impact is that going to? It's not going to change. The game will still go on and we'll love it and it'll be good.
There's still so many other features of the game. It doesn't destroy the game.
But the second guessing for the player in this instance is what concerns me now.
But we don't want to change what happened last night at the tribunal. You and I both agree violently, we agree that was the right decision, and we don't want that part of the game to change.
Would you be comfortable though if the change comes at the end of this? Stephen Hawking says, "Hey, I sent that to the tribunal for a reason, and that reason is I don't want that to happen in football."
No, I'm not going to be comfortable with that.
No, I don't think I am either.
Because I think the shift then and the fabric of the game is shifting too far.
And here's the two, this is why it's such an emotive issue. So here's the last two messages of 330. You are so wrong, Gary. I wonder if Anita Frawley and Shaden Tuck's widow agree with you. Now, I think that's just unfair to bring that up, those two instances, but I understand where you're going. And then the one before that is I agree totally with you on this one. You are playing a contact sport. The decisions around you choosing to play or not. Now, for the players that have had great instances of head injury in the past, and we've been knocked out, you've been knocked out, there has been legislation put in place that lessens that. I mean, Danny Frawley was king hit behind the play and was knocked out behind the play.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen anymore, thank God. So there is the head over the footy stuff. Doesn't happen anymore, thank God. I don't know if we're ever going to get the stage where we can get it all out.
All week, my thoughts have centred around Hunter and his well-being. So I'm really glad to see that his recovery process has started well. It was never my intention to cause any harm. I was only just trying to win the ball. So I wish him nothing but the best moving forward.
So I'll say again, David McKay was an absolute class act, the way he addressed the media afterwards and his concern for Hunter Clark, and was a great ambassador for the Adelaide Crows Footy Club. And to that end, the Crows footy boss, Adam Kelly, good enough to join us just for a couple of minutes to see what the week's been like. Adam, good morning.
Morning, Gary and Tim.
The result was it ever any in doubt for you?
Yeah, I think any time you go to a tribunal hearing, you don't have a high degree of confidence. You make some assumptions that it could go either way. The overall feeling once the verdict was handed down was one of relief for our player David. We were clear that his intention was always to play the ball and that he had a right to contest the ball and had gone about it in the right manner. So we were certainly hopeful that we would get the outcome that we did, and were very relieved once that was handed down.
Do you have any concerns now that the head of football in charge of the whole look of the game is the one that put this forward, and what that means for the competition going forward or from a week-to-week point of view?
Not concerned. I think the AFL has demonstrated over a number of years now that player safety is paramount, and there's been a number of changes to the game and certainly interpretations of rules to protect the players' heads, whether it be dangerous tackle or high bumps, and I think they're to be applauded for the stance that they've taken, and it's one that we all support as an industry, that player safety is paramount. These things get challenge from time to time, and you will find incidents that happen that might be right on the borderline when it comes to the attitude of the league, and to put it up to a tribunal at least enables it to be fully explored. And there's been a lot of debate this week about whether that action is reasonable or unreasonable, and in this instance the tribunal determined that it was reasonable, and that was a position that we'd taken into the night that was justified.
It's been a great debate. We've been talking about this all week and we've been listening to others talk about this, and it's a really interesting conversation to have. Do you think the AFL are going to push harder now for change for that type of act, though, given what happened at the tribunal last night?
It's more of that's a question for the AFL. I think one thing we acknowledge in the industry is that as a 360-degree collision game, that it's going to be hard to mitigate against all risk of injury to players, as unfortunate as it was with Hunter's injury. There will be times in the game where unfortunate accidents will occur. So, you know, in certain circumstances, we've been able to legislate against that and create an expectation for our players, and the players have adjusted their game accordingly. But when the ball is there to be won and it's a 50-50 contest and both players are acting reasonably, it's hard to sit here and understand what those rules would look like, but no doubt the AFL will be looking at any opportunity to increase player safety, and you know, clubs and players can only support them in that pursuit.
Just one final question from me before we let you go. Had McCabe been found guilty last night, would you have appealed immediately?
We hadn't fully discussed that, and to David's credit and to speak to the character of David, he was encouraging us not to. He felt like that there'd been a lot of attention to the case this week, and his mind went to Hunter and the difficult week that it would have been for him and the resources the club had put behind his case. So that speaks volumes for David, but as a club, we hadn't sat down and discussed that.
Interesting. Hey, Adam, thanks so much for giving us some time. Good luck for the rest of the year.
Thanks, Jen.
Thanks, Adam.
Adelaide Crows footy boss Adam Kelly. That's interesting. It's a really good question. That was the best question for a long time.
It deserved. That's a good question. That should have got a good question.
A good question. So David said no. He wasn't interested in appeal.
That's a very interesting response from him.
It's not about the money, money, money.
Oh, that's crass. I don't know. That's not the sort of... Well, you should have said something. It's about the loyalty, loyalty, loyalty. Tim, you said to me this is the biggest contract ever signed by an Essendon footballer.
And I said there's nobody that I could think of that's more deserving. That's what I also said.
Zachy Merritt signed a six-year deal. It's going to take him to the end of 2027, and it is fantastic news and a great endorsement of what's going on down there at the Essendon Footy Club. And he joins us on the line. Zacho, well done.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Nice relief. Well Wake done. Up. How, did you sleep last night? Was the best sleep you had last night for all year?
Yeah, it was a nice sleep. It's nice to get it all tied off and finally finished. And, keen for it can happen moving forward.
Hey, it's a really interesting one because I admired the way you went about it and spoke openly at the start of this year publicly and said, no, I'm not committing just yet. I want to see how things play out. So what is it about the first or these 12 weeks of footy that has got you now excited and committed for the next 6 years to the Bombers?
Yeah, I think looking back over the past, I guess, 7 or 8 years from the start of my career, it's probably a lot of change, and it wasn't that a great deal of alignment and trust, I guess, throughout the organisation. So, I guess from day one of pre-season, it wasn't so much just the 12 weeks of footy, but from day one of pre-season, truck has brought in a great deal of change and shift in the organisation as a whole, but more importantly, allowed us as players to really hone in on footy. And I think we're seeing a great reflection of that on field the last sort of 12 weeks. That has been majority of the time we've given consistent effort, and hopefully fans and people are seeing that change now.
I think they have, Zach. Congratulations on getting the bag. What do you think has changed around Essendon, say, since the end of last season?
I think that there's a real sense of clarity with everyone, both players and staff as well, on what their role is and what's required of them, firstly. Secondly, I think there's a real sense of buy-in and alignment across the place. I think guys are really enjoying getting to work and celebrating each other along the journey as well. So I think, as I said, it's reflecting on game day, but there's a lot of work being put in behind the games.
Is it truck that's driven that?
I think having Josh come across as well from Melbourne, obviously he's seen a lot of footy in his time as well. So I think Josh Xavier, Ben, along with Adrian, has created a great sense of alignment with those guys. But as players, I think Dyson, Andy Hurls, although he's not playing. A number of players have taken a great deal of ownership as well. And we're seeing some younger players, more importantly, I think, as well, flourish, like Parrish and Langford and Laverty down back, which is also, sort of, I think, taking a load off the shoulders of Dyson and a few others.
Have you felt any pressure this year? Obviously, every time you pick up the paper and they're talking about, you know, guys are coming out of contract, your name was mentioned, the fact that, you know, three Essendon players moved on at the end of last year, maybe Zach Merritt was going to do the same. Have you felt any of that external pressure this season?
I really didn't. The pressures I felt was about, you know, shifting the club and shifting towards being better. The contract stuff, I think, is just part of the journey and part of being an AFL player. So that wasn't something I really honed in on much. I don't think it affected me at all on field. It was more about being a better player, a better leader, and as I said, shifting the focus towards being a better club moving forward.
On leadership, this is a really interesting point that you make about that, and I really admire you the way you've gone about this. A couple of years ago, you were taken out of the leadership group. Now you're back into the leadership group. How do you reckon you've grown in that last 2 years, in leadership in particular?
Yeah, it's obviously such a hard a word to sort of define, and you know, I constantly reflect on, I guess, what I was like 2 or 3 years ago and last year and now, and I think the biggest one for me has probably been the acceptance of connecting with my teammates probably a bit deeper than just on the footy field, on the training track, and probably opening up myself a bit more as well to allow people in. And I certainly haven't really changed my personality or anything, but I think I've just changed a little bit around connecting with those guys and I guess being on their journey as much as mine.
And is that about understanding yourself better too?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was very fortunate to have a number of great people around me through my journey so far and continue to do so. But yeah, sometimes it is nice just to get a bit of feedback that potentially you weren't self-aware of at the time. And yeah, I've certainly enjoyed that journey in the last 18 months.
Is that all comes from a good place, I know. I mean, you're trying to be the best you can be because you think that's going to be the best for the footy club. But I guess along the way, it's how you can impact. And when you're the best player, or you know, in your case, certainly that or one of, then the way you carry yourself, the way you talk, the way you train, the way you sort of interact has a massive impact on the whole community. So do you get a better understanding about that, about yourself?
Yeah, I think that's what I think around the role modelling. Obviously, I always said it's important, but I think the influence was a key one. I think I felt like if I did something a certain way that everyone would just follow. I think I'm learning, and I'm still learning how to influence different people, and the way people go about it is always different as well. So I guess influence is the key word for me at the moment, and trying to help as many people as possible.
And so what's the ceiling, or from an Essendon point of view, for this year and going forward? How good can you be, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there's no ceiling, obviously, on this year, but yeah, we're continually trying to put the right foundations instead throughout this year and the next couple of months with games involved. But you know, to see the growth of those younger players this year has been awesome. But I think, as I said before, there's been a lot of growth in guys probably that have been on our list for a few years, and fans probably haven't got to see the best of them yet. So I think I'm mostly enjoying a lot more guys playing closer to their potential and finding some solutions on the list currently, which is really exciting.
Heading down to Tassie this weekend, we're hearing that it's going to be a sellout crowd down there. Are you excited? You're looking forward to that opportunity to play down there in front of those fans and against Hawthorn, one of the traditional rivals of the Essendon Footy Club?
Yeah, I am. I love playing at new stadiums, and I've only heard good things about the deck down at Launceston. So, yeah, pretty keen. Like, the boys are really excited off the bye, freshened up, and, yeah, really excited to get, hopefully, Drapes back this week and get into the Hawks.
As it's listed, there's something like Gary talked about this morning, 9 changes.
9 is 5 definite outs.
Yeah. How many changes are you expecting for the game?
I'm not too sure, to be honest. Obviously, had a few injuries in our game against West Coast a couple of weeks ago, but yeah, I'll have to get through main training session today and reassess.
And when have you seen the bag? How big is the bag?
It's not that big. It's hard to negotiate with Adrian, as you know, Tim.
So what do you do? What do you treat yourself? Is there a little treat? Is there a little something that you just, because this is a great reward for, you know, your years and years of dedication, and I know it's, you know, we're not being crass, we don't want to know how much money you're getting, but is there, you know, do you go and just maybe buy a little something just to celebrate or not?
Yeah, I'm a man of simple needs. I think growing up in a country town in Cobden, I don't think I need a great deal. So for me, it'll be a nice dinner with my partner, and that'll be about it, I reckon.
Beautifully said, mate. Well done. We congratulate you.
We do.
We think it's a great signing for the Essendon Footy Club and for yourself. You've got to the stage where you can commit, and so that's a great peace of mind. So well done, and good luck for the rest of the year.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Big game tonight. I want to get your little thoughts on this. Although you're second-tier Tim now. You're not the top-tier tipster anymore. You've dropped right off the pace.
Well, there's a very good reason for that, too.
What is it?
Well, you gave me a 90-day free look at your tips, and I refuse to pay what I believe is excessive and exorbitant subscription to your tips.
You didn't subscribe.
And I haven't, and I may have to revisit that. Well, I may have to revisit that because I've dropped back down. But it's sort of like a Peloton. The whole tipping thing's like a Peloton. At the moment, I'm just sitting back in the middle of the pack.
Mm.
All the others up the front are doing all the hard riding.
You know, I wonder if there's a bit of Geelong about you, because I thought the Cats, we spoke about this 2 weeks ago, the Cats were just going under the radar at eight wins and three losses.
Mm.
And they hadn't really had their full group together. They were still waiting to have a team that had Hawkins and Dangerfield and Rowan and Duncan, who was injured, and Cameron, all on the one side. And they got them all on the one side, and they looked pretty ominous recently.
Mm.
They play tonight against the Western Bulldogs at GMHBA Stadium. Guthrie comes back into the side. Higgins is outmanaged. Narkles, well, he was the sub last week, against the Western Bulldogs side. I got no change. I thought Easterwood was going to play, but he hasn't been named in this side.
He's one of the emergencies.
Yeah, I thought I heard on the news that he was going to play.
They've got some solid emergencies, haven't they, the Bulldogs?
Yeah, McLean, Wood, Wallace, that's good. Mitch Wallace is at least in contention. He's named as an emergency and Sweet, the big ruckman.
So has Geelong. Higgins, Stanley, Guthrie, Narkle. So Higgins is now out of the side.
Well, he's been managed, they said.
Well, he's been named as emergency.
Though. Yeah.
So he's been managed into emergency.
Well, I think what Chris Scott says is he had a very interesting thing that he said through the week when his press conference. I should have got it out, but he said, we don't necessarily pick the best 18 or the best 22 for now or the best available 22 for now. He said, so I think he was intimating that we've got a big eye on a much bigger prize.
Yeah.
So what is our best 22 now? Might not suit us to play that today, but it will suit us in terms of what we're going to have by the end of the year. So whether that's Higgins or Narkle, because we debated about Narkle last week. So maybe they're just going, okay, this time of the year we can give him a spell, but if we get an injury, he could still play. So maybe that's where they're at.
You can talk all the stats you like. Let's put that to one side. Where in your mind did Geelong have an advantage in this game, and where in your mind do the Western Bulldogs have an advantage in this game?
I think Geelong have got two absolute ripping A-grade forwards. Two. And it's going to test Gardner and Keith and Cordy and those blokes. The Western Bulldogs have got one absolute ripping A-grade forward. That could be the difference in the end. Norton's ripping A-grade.
Right.
You got Dangerfield and Hawkins with a wild card of Rowan.
If midfield and supply are equal, you think that might be the difference?
Maybe. I could very well be wrong, but I just see them as so dangerous. I see them, the more time they spend together, then the more dangerous they're going to become. I saw Cameron's willingness and ability to get up high and push from one end of the ground to the other. Hawkins, we know how dangerous he can be in general field play. I think there's a selflessness about it. I think Duncan back with Guthrie back. So that's the Geelong side of it. But then you've got a Western Bulldogs who Luke Beveridge has conceded this is going to be their biggest test, right? So that's interesting. Their midfield is very dangerous going one way, which is the same for all clubs. When you lose the ball at the contest and you can get exposed the other. But I guess that's the challenge for them, the challenge for this.
You're not saying there's an accountability issue with their midfield, are you?
No. What I'm saying is it happens for all clubs.
But
you've got to win the contest.
Attacking and offensive, they're a powerful, powerful unit.
Yeah, if you're winning the ball at the contest, then there's few teams in the competition that could inflict more damage on you than the Western Bulldogs.
You make a very good point about Cameron, Jeremy Cameron, and his movement and what that does to a defensive unit.
Yeah. Yeah, it does, because you can also, you can take your opponents to areas of the ground that they're not that comfortable in going to. So, and look, this hasn't been a sign of what we've seen from Jeremy Cameron in recent times or in his earlier at the GWS Giants, but it will going forward. So clubs will then make a decision on him and go, okay, we will let him be you know, a player in that area of the ground and not chase him and pick him up on the way back if that's the way he wants to play and see whether he can blow him up. Because I didn't know if he's going to be a big aerobic animal or not, Jeremy Cameron.
Where would you expect them to play Blitzarves? He's a bit of a Swiss Army knife for Geelong. Where would you expect him to go to be able to exploit the Bulldogs tonight?
Well, what they like is Smith and Blitzarves, I think, on wings because of their running capacity. And so you watch them tonight, particularly Isaac and Blitzarves, how hard they get back to support. And what you've got with the Geelong Footy Club is a licence for Henderson, and you watch this tonight. Mm. Henderson, you watch Tui, Henry will do it from time to time. They go hard forward. They run hard forward, and they will attack, and you'll see, you know, Henderson shots a goal, Tui shots a goal. They do that because they know they've got great coverage. And that's Smith and Blitzarves that will watch the back of them, and they'll let them run forward, and they'll work together through that back half. So I think they like them on the wings. I do. I think they're a really important part of the way they want to play. And then you've got the Bulldogs. Well, that's okay. Then you got their wingers and their midfielders who are just prolific ball winners. What do you do with O'Connor, who's a...
I was going to ask you the same question.
Player? Who does he go to?
Well, I was thinking about... I was going to ask you the question. Do you send him to Libba or do you send him to... do you send him to Bontempelli?
McRae never gets tagged.
Do you send him to McRae?
Or do you send him to Daniel? Or do you send him to Dale?
Well...
Chris Scott also said, yeah, no, we'll look at Liberatore, but we also look at picking off some of their attacking halfbackers as
well. Or do you send him to young Smith, who provides an enormous amount of run for the West? If you let Smith go, it's amazing how often he becomes part of a chain and a link-up for the Bulldogs in their running department when the ball gets out wide.
Yep.
I mean, not to say that he won't get the ball inside, but on the outside, if you allow him to run, then he can become a really... really a thorn in your side.
Why don't clubs go after Jackson McRae, who, if you had a look at his ball-winning ability over the past, I think it was 30 or 40 games, one of those stats that was put out, he's a 30 minimum, often 35, and sometimes 40-plus, consistently week in, week out. Why don't clubs go after him?
I think the simple answer would be that people don't think that he hurts you that much with those possessions.
Mm.
He's not quick. He's creative. He can go inside. He can go outside. But I think players look at, well, opposition clubs look at the Bulldogs and say, okay, in terms of importance, where does he sit on that ladder? And maybe he's two or three rungs down. Which team went after? Was it Melbourne? Yeah, Melbourne went after Libba a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, it worked.
And it worked for them.
Yeah, it did.
But that doesn't mean to say that everybody's going to go after Libba either.
No.
Different coaching staff will look at players and think, okay, the importance here for us is to be able to reduce the effectiveness of, you know, Bontempelli maybe it is tonight.
Mm. And someone's saying, don't I have Bruce as an A-grade midfielder who's kicked 34 goals? Not in that category, I don't, but it's just an opinion. He's third on the goal kicking with 34 goals, yep. He's had a bag of 10, I think, in that 34. But he's been good. He's been much better than he was last year, Josh Bruce. And he's important, really important to the Western Bulldogs. It's Bontempelli getting forward and kicking goals, which would be probably of the more greater concern.
That's interesting too from Brendan. I've never seen anybody go after Guthrie, yet you and I both had this conversation about him yesterday. Is Cam Guthrie now the most important player for Geelong in their midfield? I think he is because of the way that he works in all areas of the game. You weren't so sure about him. You thought that
no, I'm
maybe
sure of him
Duncan
as a player,
is.
But whether he's the most important, I love Duncan, but they don't. Western Bulldogs don't go after anyone really.
They don't employ a tagger, do they?
No, they're happy to go.
They back their unit.
They back in McRae, they back in Bontempelli and Libba and Hunter and whoever else they got running through there. Smith, of course. So probably don't have to when you got that sort of level of talent.
McRae, this is according to Long, he has the best kicking efficiency in the comp for a midfielder and he hits hard kicks. He's grossly underrated. So, he's leading the AFL in disposals and scoring volumes.
So why don't clubs go after him?
Good question.
Righto. So
you can't be smoking the pipe after that.
So who are you tipping?
You got to apologise. Yes. You got to apologise to everybody for that.
No,
smoking your fat crap.
Who are you tipping? Second row tier, second tier, Tim.
I'm tipping the Cats at home. Yeah.